Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Quimry. Thank you for tuning in. A ballot measure that would repeal ranked choice voting in Alaska has narrowly failed. That's according to final unofficial results the Division of Election released last night. Ballot Measure 2 failed by just 664 votes. Repeal campaign leader Phil Izon says he'll submit a recount request once the election is certified, though he says he's not optimistic it will change the outcome. Izon says he's considering another repeal initiative in 2026.
Against all odds and with just a fraction of the resources, we stood toe-to-toe with the giants and outfunded us 100-1.
Opponents of repeal raised $14 million to preserve the system Alaska voters adopted in 2020. It pairs a nonpartisan primary with a ranked choice ballot in the general. The No on 2 campaign was thrilled. Liesl McGuire was the campaign chair.
We're elated. Our whole team has worked very hard, having conversations with Alaskans all across the state who are passionate about their right to vote for the person that they believe in.
Yesterday was also tabulation day at the Alaska Division of Elections, the day when second and third choices that voters mark on their ballots were tallied. As expected, Republican Nick Begich III won the race for Alaska's only seat in the U.S. House. Democratic Congresswoman Mary Paltola issued a statement saying she would root for him. The tabulations did not change the finish order in any legislative races either. But when the final absentee and question ballots were counted, incumbent Democrat Cliff Groh appears to have lost his North Anchorage House seat to Republican challenger David Nelson by a 23-vote margin. All results remain unofficial until November 30th, when the Division of Elections plans to certify the election. Recounts must be requested no later than 5 days after the election is certified. A plan to extend Juneau's downtown waterfront walking path, also known as the Sea Walk, crossed a major hurdle earlier this week. The city has long planned to develop a continuous mile-and-a-half-long path from the Douglas Bridge to the AJ Dock. That's the cruise ship dock farthest from downtown. The city has developed the Seawalk in sections over the years, and this new section will extend a quarter mile south towards Thane. Alex Pierce, the city's visitor industry director, presented the project in May. She said it will make Juneau more welcoming and accessible for tourists.
We need to get further along in the design process to have a more accurate estimate, but we can assume it's a $20 to $25 million project.
But the project can't move forward unless the city can negotiate a land swap deal with the private owners of the Franklin Dock, where the Seawalk currently ends. On Monday, the Juneau Assembly voted to let the city manager start those negotiations. Right now, the AJ Dock is isolated from the rest of the ships. Tourists coming off of ships there have to shuttle into town or walk roughly 10 miles through an industrial area to get there. The extension will allow them to walk directly to Juneau along the waterfront. But a lot of residents use the Seawalk too, whether that's walking their dogs or simply sitting on a bench to look out at the channel. Carla Hart, a longtime activist against the growth of tourism in Juneau, says those locals should have more say in how this project moves forward. She spoke about it at the meeting on Monday.
There's no public urgency, and delaying this will not impair existing use and scale of the cruise industry. Rushing it will have unknown consequences.
She asked the assembly to table the negotiations to gather more input. The city already has close to $6 million set aside for the project for marine passenger fees. The assembly will need to determine how to pay for the rest, but passenger fees will likely pay for most of it. And Alaska's transgender community is worried that a second Donald Trump presidency might threaten their access to gender-affirming care, or health care that allows people to transition medically. And providers in the state are worried, too. Margie Thompson sits in her office, holding a heart made of clay in her hands. It's painted the colors of the transgender pride flag, pink, white, and blue. Thompson is a therapist here in Juneau, and she says she's nervous to speak publicly about the risks to gender-affirming care in Alaska. But now, she says, is the time to stand up and use her voice to support her clients, who are overwhelmingly transgender. She says she served 350 people in Alaska who identify as gender expansive, people whose gender identity, expression, or experience doesn't align with the sex they were assigned at birth. On the day after the election, she had 4 new requests from patients asking for referrals for gender-affirming care, in case they lose access to it.
I think a lot of people are worried that that might go away. So even though they don't have the money now and they're going to go in debt, they want to get the referral.
Thompson says several providers in Juneau support gender-affirming care services, and no one has told her they plan to stop.
Right now, we have a strong community, and they're hopefully going to get stronger and pull together. Yet the fear is real, and the risk is real.
Alaska's two main providers for gender-affirming care say getting a jump on services may be the right move. President-elect Donald Trump has made campaign promises to block gender-affirming care for youth and to stop federal dollars going toward care, including Medicare and Medicaid. And he's done this before. Rose O'Hare-Jolly is the Alaska State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates. Planned Parenthood is one of the biggest providers of reproductive and gender-affirming care in Alaska. They say that during Trump's first term in office, he blocked funding to Planned Parenthood by removing abortion providers from Title X, the more than 50-year-old federal grant program that provides reproductive care across the nation. This made it harder for low-income patients to receive reproductive care from providers like Planned Parenthood. The Biden administration reversed those changes, but O'Hare-Jolly says it's likely Trump will do the same again, affecting the organization's ability to provide all care, including gender-affirming care.
But we know that these attacks are coming because they have already started them. And now that they are in, you know, positions of power, there's no reason to believe them that they won't continue with the promises they've made.
But they say that Planned Parenthood has weathered a Trump administration before, and it doesn't plan on shutting its doors.
I want them to know, like, we will continue to provide as much care as we can in all the places and ways that we can, right? Unless or until someone forces us to stop, we will not stop providing care.
Based in Anchorage, Identity Alaska serves nearly 900 transgender patients. Director Tom Pittman says the same funding cuts would apply to them as well, and most of their patients use Medicare and Medicaid.
It would mean that 70% of our patient revenue would evaporate, which is significant.
And Pittman says that anti-trans rhetoric implies that trans people are a new phenomenon, which isn't true.
And this attempt to shift the definitions and histories in order to make a group of people feel this vulnerable, it really is unconscionable.
Healthcare for transgender youth has become a hot-button issue for Republican politicians. But the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, and the World Health Organization all support the use of medical gender-affirming care for both adults and youth. Aiden Key is an educator who trains schools on how to accommodate trans and gender-expansive youth in Alaska. He says the incoming administration will be hard on all trans people, but he's worried about youth especially.
We as adults are going to need to find our courage to push back and address the situations that do come up because these children's lives depend on it. I have no doubt that since the election to today, lives are already ended.
Data from Crisis Lines support Key's theory. One national organization that supports LGBTQ plus youth reported a 700% spike in calls and texts immediately after the election. But he has hope for Alaska's trans community. And he says in the days ahead, leaning on community is the one thing that everyone can do. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Anyone experiencing a crisis can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK or contact the Crisis Text Line by texting TALK to 741-741. And there will be more women than men in the Alaska House of Representatives for the first time in its history when the legislature convenes in January. That's according to the final unofficial election results released Wednesday. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
21 women will serve in the Alaska House. That's a majority of the 40-member chamber. Assuming that, as expected, the winners in the unofficial tally are certified at the end of the month. Representative Genevieve Mina, an Anchorage Democrat, says it's great to see women better represented in state government. She says it's a self-reinforcing trend. The more women are elected, the more likely women are to get involved.
Well, I think it's really exciting, right? Like, this is what it looks like to have genuine gender parity and representation in our government and politics.
It's the first time either the state House or Senate will be majority woman, according to records maintained by the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. A review of legislative rosters dating back to the first state legislature in 1959 confirms the milestone. Mina says she expects the record number of women in the House to drive conversations about things like child care, education, and family policy.
Just having that empathy and experience with children and knowing those hardships, I think makes a huge difference in trying to figure out what policies we can tweak to make our government and our state more welcoming for parents, for families, and for children.
Five of the Alaska Senate's 20 seats will be held by women in the next legislature, the same number as last session. That makes the total number of female lawmakers 26. That's 43% of the total seats in the state capitol, which is also a record. The previous high was 23 back in 2019. Six women were newly elected to the Alaska House this year, according to unofficial results. 14 won re-election and will return to the House, and one former female lawmaker is making a comeback. Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican, says she's planning to start a Women of the Alaska Legislature caucus in the coming term. She says that too often, male-dominated committees and leadership teams discount the input of their female colleagues.
My goal with this caucus is, of course, to talk about probably some women's issues, pay parity, child care, things like that, but also to be a place where women legislators can feel encouraged and can be mentored.
She says she's expecting the large number of women to make the legislature as a whole more productive. She pointed to research from MIT that found that teams with a greater number of women outperformed male-dominated groups. As for why the number of women in the legislature has grown, Geisel points to the state's open nonpartisan primary system.
There's no blessing from a political party required. And that alone is empowering, I think, for women considering entering public policy.
Alaska's record high number of female lawmakers matches a trend seen across the country. A record number of women will serve in state legislatures next year. Women will hold a third of the more than 2,400 seats in state houses nationwide. That eclipses the record set just this year. In addition to the Alaska House, just seven state legislative chambers are majority female or at gender parity in the U.S. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
This is KTOO.